Madam Clerk.
Oral questions by members.
Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And the Premier spoke eloquently in his remarks just moments ago about the arrival of vaccine in British Columbia and the hope that it brings. And we certainly agree with that. The AstraZeneca vaccine has arrived in British Columbia, and we all know that it comes with an expiry date. British Columbians are still waiting for details about how exactly that vaccine will be used. So we have raised this question before and have asked that the Premier provide clarity on the order and the criteria for vaccinating priority groups. So I know members in this House and certainly members in the opposition have heard from workers, from teachers, childcare workers, public transit workers, and of course, first responders. So I would once again ask the Premier today, I know he's aware that AstraZeneca comes with an expiry date, and if today the Premier could share with us and specifically with those critical frontline workers, the plan for the use of AstraZeneca.
Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker, and I thank the Leader of the Opposition for her question. And it is absolutely true that the first tranche of the first round of AstraZeneca does have a best before date of April 2nd. Dr. Henry and her team, Dr. Ballum and the immunization team, are looking carefully at where we can best deploy that precious resource to meet the needs of frontline workers and a whole host of others. The member talked about a range of workers who are concerned about their place in the queue. I have to say, and I'm sure that the members in this House have received the same amount of correspondence that I have from firefighters, nurses, nurse practitioners, the range of frontline workers, paramedics. The list is long. The mail is about 2.5 inches thick. Every argument, a valid argument, every one carefully considered by the Public Health Office. Dr. Henry will be deploying the resource as she best sees fit to contain outbreaks. We've heard of course, you know, that there will be a blanket immunization process underway in Prince Rupert, Port Ed, and Haida Gwaii. There are examples like that across the province. I know that, I expect further questions on this. I'll leave it to the Minister of Health to go into more precision on how Dr. Henry plans to deploy this. But I want to assure the member and all members of the House, and indeed all British Columbians, that we are going to use what is now a precious resource that's coming in increasing abundance, which is fundamentally important to us getting out of this. We're going to deploy that resource as we see best fit to protect the most vulnerable in our communities. That's what Dr. Henry's made abundantly clear through her regular briefings, and that's our commitment today.
Leader of Official Opposition Supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the Premier's response. I think British Columbians, and certainly members on this side of the House, do have some very specific questions about the timelines for providing the information. We all recognize that the pandemic, and in fact we just talked about that in very poignant terms, and we recognize the year that it has been for British Columbia and the world. So the pandemic has been here for a year, and we have celebrated and honored and respected frontline workers. When we think about that group, and the Premier's accurate, there is a long list: teachers, first responders, dentists, agricultural workers, transit workers. These groups are waiting, and they have been patient and resilient and hardworking. They deserve to know where they fit in on the priority list. We know that it's important. They're critical frontline workers, and they are facing risks every single day. So with the deadline that is attached to AstraZeneca, could the Premier at least indicate the prioritization, which workers can expect to get a vaccination and when?
Premier.
Well, thank you, Honourable Speaker. And again, Dr. Henry is the expert in this area. She's working with the immunization team to make sure that we don't leave one drop of vaccine underutilized over the next number of weeks and months. I want to pause, though, and speak a little bit more comprehensively on the context for the member's question. And we've all agreed and acknowledged that there are no shortage of people deserving of immediate immunization. But our challenge is not with this federal government, not even with the last federal government, successive federal governments going back 25 years that let our ability to immunize ourselves atrophy. I'm not blaming anyone when I say that, Honourable Speaker. I'm just stating the facts. Our ability to do what other jurisdictions are doing has been compromised. And we now acknowledge that. And thank goodness the life sciences sector here in British Columbia is well placed to lead the renewal of that ability here in BC. Having said all of that, we're dependent on offshore supplies. We saw a very disappointing drop in delivery in early February that took a little bit of the wind out of all of our sails. We were absolutely enthusiastic about the prospect of mass immunizations, starting with the most vulnerable, making sure that we could target the populations that the member and I agree on are critical to the well-being of our communities. But again, with a limited supply, we're leaving it up to Dr. Henry to give us the advice that we believe will best allow us to meet the needs of everyone. Every vaccination delivered makes us a little bit safer, whether we're frontline workers, whether we're elected representatives, whether we're family members in the various component parts of our beautiful province. So I again will allow the Minister of Health, I'm sure, in subsequent questions to get into more precision on this. I thank the member for her question, and I want to acknowledge, as she has, that we need to make sure we're speaking with one voice coming out of this. And I know the two of us will keep doing that.
Member for Kelowna Mission.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. As mentioned, we have a limited and sporadic supply. And as AstraZeneca vaccine arrives and larger numbers of British Columbians need to be booked for appointments, we only have one health authority in this province with an online system. This is the most important public health effort in our lifetime, but this government has failed to create an online registration option despite having a year to get ready. To the Premier, why is there no universal online booking system?
Minister of Health.
Thank you very much. Thank you to the Honourable Member for her question. And I want to say, express my appreciation to the Leader of the Opposition, to the former Leader of the Opposition, the Member for Vancouver Quilchena, the Health Critic, the former Health Critic, the Member for Kelowna Lake Country, and the Leader of the Green Party for all of their questions, but also their support and contribution and acts of personal generosity over the past year, which I deeply appreciate. With respect to the booking system for COVID-19 vaccinations, as members will know, starting at noon today, we are advancing to the next group of British Columbians in our age-based effort, those born in 1936 or before, between the ages of 85 to 89. Over the last number of days, as of 9 o'clock today, 41,661 people have booked their appointments. And I wanted to acknowledge the excellent work in the last number of days of TELUS and of health authorities in improving systems and responses to people, such that in health authorities today, there's a 1 minute wait time on average this morning for calls that we've received. So all of that is good. As you know, for the 75 to 79 category, starting with that and then throughout after that in the pandemic, there will also be, in addition to call centers, an online platform at that time. This was part of the presentation that was made to the opposition and everyone else a week ago last Monday, and we should see that soon.
Member for Kelowna Mission on supplemental.
Thank you, and thanks for that answer. And based on that, we only have about 7.4 million more bookings to go. The province of Quebec opened online registrations over 2 weeks ago. They registered 100,000 people on day one. Lori Dahlgren is one of thousands of frustrated British Columbians, and she says, and I quote, "They've known this has been coming for a long time. They've had plenty of time to get ready, and it's unacceptable. It should be online right now. It just doesn't make any sense in this day and age that they couldn't get with the program," end quote. Again, to the Premier, why is there no online system now?
Minister of Health.
Honourable Speaker, in the first phase of the pandemic, public health organized 1,390 clinics across BC, delivering full immunizations in long-term care and assisted living to many frontline healthcare workers, of course, to many other vulnerable people, including people in rural and remote Indigenous communities. As vaccine came, that vaccine was delivered into people's arms in an efficient way, representing, I think, an extraordinary collective effort by everybody in public health care. And that is what we're continuing to do. The main limitation, as the member will know, and as the Premier noted, is the amount of vaccine we have. And we have organized based on very important principles. Those principles, most importantly, are to protect those who have the highest vulnerability to COVID-19 first. That's the reason we started with long-term care, and we've seen the effectiveness of the vaccine in that venue. And now we're working through, based on age, the general population. We'll also be using the AstraZeneca resource. There are, we have received, as the Leader of the Opposition noted, 68,000 doses of AstraZeneca have now arrived. We'll be receiving in late April a further 136,000, and in late May a further 68,000 doses of AstraZeneca. The priority right now, as the Premier has said and as Dr. Henry has said, is dealing with outbreaks and exposures in workplaces right now in the most high-risk industries to COVID-19. That is happening now and will happen with the first doses of COVID-19, 41,000 of which, of the 68,000, will expire on April the 2nd. So that is the approach being taken there. And then next week, we'll be presenting the plan for the following 204,000 doses in the next two rounds. So this effort, I think, our immunization effort in BC, has been highly organized. We organized and delivered vaccine to long-term care before other jurisdictions, including some of the ones mentioned by the Honourable Member. And I think the team who's leading this immunization campaign in public health is doing an exceptional job.
Thank you, Minister. Leader of the Third Party.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. Today marks 6 months since the NDP government released the Old Growth Strategic Review Panel report, although to be clear, this government has had the report nearly a year. They received it in April 2020, but chose not to share it with the public until September. The report called for a paradigm shift in our approach to forestry in British Columbia, especially our ongoing gross mismanagement of old growth. One of the key recommendations is to immediately defer logging of the most at-risk old growth to prevent loss of rare ecosystems. And the report specified this must happen within 6 months. Here we are, and this government still has not taken any meaningful action to protect these forests. Instead, we are losing critical old growth stands as the old strategy of talk and log continues. My question through you, Honourable Speaker, is to the Minister of Forest, Lands, Natural Resource Operations. It's now been 6 months since government released this report and many months into her tenure as minister. Where is the action that was promised to protect our most endangered old growth forests?
Minister of Forest, Lands, Natural Resource Operations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the leader of the third party for this question. And it's important to remember that for too long, there has been a divisive and patchwork approach to how old growth forests are managed in our province. Those who are calling for a return to the status quo are putting BC's majestic old growth and vital biodiversity at risk. And those who are calling for an immediate moratorium are ignoring the needs of thousands of workers and families in forest-dependent communities right across our province. We want old growth forests to be appreciated by people today and in years to come. It's also a priority for our government to support good jobs for people in BC's forestry sector. That's why our government asked the independent panel to advise us on how we can do better when it comes to protecting our old growth forests. And our government is dedicated to implementing the recommendations to ensure new holistic approaches to how we manage BC's old growth forests.
Leader of Third Party on Supplemental.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. And let's just go through that answer a little bit. A divisive and patchwork response is actually resulting in a particularly divisive and patchwork old growth forests that are left in this province, which are diminishing by the day. The minister talks about an immediate moratorium, which is not what the panel recommended. It recommended a six-month work with its deadline for deferral. And when the minister says she asked the panel to advise, that is exactly what they've done. What I've pointed out in my question, Honourable Speaker, is that the government has not responded to that advice that was given, and that promise that was made by the Premier during the September election campaign that all recommendations of that panel's report would be followed by this government. A necessary first step is the immediate interim protection across BC to create some breathing room and protect what we have left. My question again is to the Minister of Forest Lands, Natural Resource Operations. We can't afford years of delay on this anymore. When will she fulfill the promise that was made to implement the old growth panel recommendations, beginning with immediate interim protections in our high-risk old growth forests?
Minister of Forest Land, Natural Resource Operations.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'd like to correct some inaccuracies from the member. We have taken some important first steps when it comes to taking action to protect old growth and implement the recommendations from the report. The independent panel recommended we involve Indigenous governments and organizations within the first 6 months of releasing the report, and we have done that and continue to engage with Indigenous governments and organizations on this. The panel also recommended we take immediate action to protect ecosystems at very high risk. We have also done that. For example, over 170,000 hectares of old growth in the Clayquot Sound, about 1,000 hectares of old growth in Stockdale Creek, almost 10,000 hectares in Upper Southgate River. This coastal rainforest is home to wildlife and multiple species of salmon, and that is just to name a few. We have also initiated action on two other recommendations aimed at improving public information and compliance. And while we have taken these important first steps, as recommended by the panel, within 6 months, we know there is much more work to do. And we are dedicated to continuing in this important work with government-to-government discussions with Indigenous leaders, talking to our partners in labor, industry, environmental organization, and communities. We have taken those first initial steps, and there is more to do, and we are committed. We are committed to following the recommendations of the Old Growth Report. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Member for Peace River South.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So the Premier is asking this House to approve another $13 billion without telling anyone how it will be spent, in defiance of the Financial Administration Act. The last time we approved $1.5 billion without knowing how it would be spent, the Premier used that to craft his own election platform and then never even got that money out the door. We've seen nothing but a botched small business recovery grant, delayed COVID rebate program, and little in the way of any accountability from this government. How can the Premier rightly ask for another mystery fund of $13 billion when we have no idea how that money is going to be spent?
Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, I think, let's be really clear, Mr. Speaker, we are in a pandemic. We've been here for a year. Everyone here in this House has acknowledged how important it is to support people. We've been here in this very hybrid style of doing the people's work and recognizing how important it is to support people. And that's exactly what we've been doing this entire year. I want to thank the members opposite for their collaboration. And we are still in the pandemic. We're going to continue to support people here in British Columbia. We're going to continue to support businesses in British Columbia because that's what they need from their government, Mr. Speaker.
Member for Peace River South.
Well, thank you. Let's be clear. The last time we've seen this type of disregard for provincial financial rules was in the 1990s, when the NDP government presented the infamous Fudget Budget. The Premier should know this all too well. He was working in the Ministry of Finance at that time. The now Health Minister was the Principal Secretary for NDP Glenn Clark, Premier at the time. And this Premier's Chief of Staff was also working back then in Glenn Clark's office. Seems the same players are back on the field and history is now repeating itself. So will the Premier admit he's in violation of the purpose of the Financial Administration Act by asking for another $13 billion without even showing anybody how that money is going to be spent?
Minister of Finance.
Well, Mr. Speaker, well, back in the 90s, I was raising some small babies, and it was a very busy time for me, so I don't know what the member's referring to. I wasn't here in this place. But again, Mr. Speaker, I want to be very clear. We have been in a pandemic. We have been in a pandemic, Mr. Speaker. Everyone here stood in this place today acknowledging how difficult it has been for so many, the sacrifices people have made, those who have been going to work to make sure that we were healthy. And the demand on government has been to be there for people. We have been there for people. We will continue to be there for people, Mr. Speaker, because that's the kind of government we are.
Member for Kamloops South Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, the Premier has indeed bungled his COVID recovery rebate. He has completely botched the small business recovery grant program. He's delayed the budget and quarterly reports, blaming that on an election, which he called. And now he doesn't seem to care about BC's budget transparency laws. So my question is this, how are we supposed to give the Premier a blank check for $13 billion with no budget and no spending plan?
Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, the members opposite will know full well that we do interim supply every single spring. That this and that, Mr. Speaker, and Mr. Speaker, given the state of affairs around this pandemic, it's absolutely critical that we continue to do the work that British Columbians depend on us, which is to be there for them, to make sure that their supports are there. And in fact, Mr. Speaker, the member opposite mentioned the BC Recovery Benefit. Well, I'm very happy to rise in this House, Mr. Speaker, and point out that 2.3 million people have received a recovery benefit. They have received a recovery benefit. And Mr. Speaker, that amounts to well over $1 billion. And not only that, Mr. Speaker, that's $1 billion that's going into the local economies, Mr. Speaker.
Members.
And Mr. Speaker.
Members, let's listen to answer, please.
I want to tell members a story about what it really means for communities around this province. So I heard from someone a friend of mine whose mother, 75 years old, was anxious about going online. She went online, she got her recovery benefit within 3 or 4 days, and then she did a Zoom call with two of her elderly friends. And they were making plans about where they were going to go in their community to spend their recovery benefit. Because, Mr. Speaker, that money is circulating in communities. It's making a difference for British Columbian businesses. It's making a difference for British Columbian communities. And it is helping to take care of all of us through this pandemic.
Member for Kamloops South Thompson on supplemental.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the Premier has delayed the budget. He's delayed the quarterly reports. He's expanded the use of special warrants. He hasn't released the TELUS contract, which we've been calling for all week. He hid a critical long-term care report during the recent provincial election. And now the Premier wants to spend $13 billion without a budget and no spending plan. No details, Mr. Speaker. So my question again to the Premier, why is he bit by bit manipulating BC's budget process, and why does he no longer care about BC's budget transparency laws?
Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, I think British Columbians know exactly how much this government cares about them. That's why we have been delivering for them. That's why we have recovery benefits. That's why we have business recovery opportunities. It is why we are making sure that we have robust plans in place to get the vaccinations into people's arms, Mr. Speaker. British Columbians know very much how much their government cares about them.
Member for Abbotsford West.
Thanks, Honourable Speaker. Well, as we've heard, there's another anniversary taking place this spring. It was 25 years ago that the most notorious example of budgetary manipulation and chicanery took place, the NDP Fudget Budget. The finance minister says ancient history, except it was the history of the premier, it was the history of the health minister, the history of the premier's chief of staff.
Members,
hey, the band's back together again. The budgetary Blues Brothers are back on the road and they're playing the same playlist, Mr. Speaker. You know, over the last 3 years, you can always tell when the government's uncomfortable, can't you, Mr. Speaker?
Member, continue.
Over the last 3 years, this premier and this government have steadily dismantled the very statutory safeguards that were put in place after the Fudget budget to guard against budgetary chicanery. And now, led by the same people that were involved in that, they are seeking spending authority, Mr. Speaker, for $13 billion without a single line describing what that money will be spent for. Not only have they not provided a budget for the coming fiscal year, and here's the really fascinating part, they have tied spending for the next 3 months to, get this, the budget that was presented 13 months ago that the Premier himself acknowledged wasn't accurate 3 weeks after it was presented, Mr. Speaker. How can British Columbians have any confidence whatsoever in a government that is ignoring the legal requirements of responsible budgeting and basing its spending plans on a budget that the Premier himself acknowledged was out of date days after it was presented in this House 13 months ago?
Minister of Finance.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, certainly the member is trying to spin a narrative that is so far from reality that I think British Columbians should be embarrassed at the official opposition. There is a pandemic still, honourable member. We just spoke about that today, recognizing the sacrifices and the challenges that so many British Columbians have endured for 12 months. The sacrifices that they have made by going to work, by taking care of our children, by caring for our aging parents, by making sure there's groceries there for us when we need them, Mr. Speaker. And just like everybody else has really been challenged to accommodate this change, there has been some changes as a result of the pandemic here before this House. We are in an unprecedented time. There's a tremendous amount of work that needs to go into making sure that British Columbians continue to get the supports that they need, and that's why we're delivering the budget on April 20th, honourable member. You will see a budget that will detail exactly how we will move forward, continuing to protect British Columbians and build a road for economic recovery.
Member for Abbotsford West on supplemental.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. What is clear and becomes increasingly more clear every day is that this government, this premier, and apparently this finance minister are incapable of abiding by the basic legal requirements of budgeting that, by the way, earned this province the reputation as a leader in Canada, not a leader, the leader, for transparent and responsible budgeting, Mr. Speaker. Talk about fiscal sleight of hand, and I'm waiting for the minister to tell me what part of what I'm about to say is inaccurate. The premier and the finance minister are actually asking the House to agree to this, Mr. Speaker. They are asking the House to agree that last year's pre-pandemic budget will be deemed to be this year's budget. They will deem it to be this year's budget, Mr. Speaker, so that they can spend $13 billion. Now, if anything I have just said is inaccurate, the minister can stand up and rebut it. The NDP, Mr. Speaker, must be the only government in the entire world using a pre-pandemic 2020 budget as the basis for spending authority over a year later in the midst of a pandemic-plagued economy. Mr. Speaker, why is the NDP, this is my question, why is the NDP consistently consistently incapable of following the basic rules around responsible and transparent budgeting? And why does the Premier believe that his government should be given permission to spend $13 billion on the basis of absolutely zero in the way of description, and by tying that spending to a budget that he himself acknowledged was out of date days after it was tabled 13 months ago?
Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, the member opposite mentions transparency. Well, I seem to recall that there was an ICBC document and pages got torn out, and wasn't that sort of when they were on this side of the house or something about that? So I don't think that the folks over on the other side can say much about transparency. Mr. Speaker, what British Columbians need to know is that we have demonstrated our commitment as a government to be there for them. We have brought in supports, we've brought in services, we have been taking care of businesses and people, their health care needs. We have been there for them, Mr. Speaker. We're going to continue to be there for them, and I'm very proud of what our government has done and what we're going to keep doing.
The bell ends the question period.